Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 116. The real NFT was the friends we lost along the way.
That's one of our best titles yet. It doesn't top Bobby Kotick getting topped by Phil Spencer.
I don't think that was the actual title of that episode, Amanda. It's just getting lewder and lewder every time you think about it.
Lewd. It's funnier and funnier every time I think about it because Bobby Kotick is Boss Baby.
I know. It's so good. And Charles made some memes of that,
which are amazing. The memification of the last episode was so good.
It was really good. So we are back from a week off. We have a hellish Airbnb story that will not be told on this show.
Or any show, yeah. To be clear. It's not happening. But if you want to ask us that question, we might tell you.
We'll be at GDC at PAX East. Probably at the bar thinking about this hellacious Airbnb situation.
But first, we have a jam-packed show both today and in our financials episode. So how things are going to go is if you are listening to this when we intended to release it, then you will hear episode the next.
Yeah.
On
episode 117 will be the next episode.
Yes.
The very special, one of hopefully only two big earnings shows this quarter.
This quarter. But anyway, we think they'll be going up one day after the other.
Potentially. We might give it some room to breathe and everything.
We'll think about it.
We're going to think about it. But here's the thing I do want to say up front. We are covering Investment Interlude today. We are not covering the Bungie acquisition today. That will be part of our investment show because obviously that's a big piece of Sony's announcements and made more sense to group that together as we talk about Sony.
Money, money, money.
Money!
What do we want to talk about first today, though? So, not NFTs, though, right?
No, that's last.
Right.
All right, here's the deal. So remember you covered that big Steam report?
I did.
Epic did their own.
Ooh.
So we're going to start with that.
Okay.
Epic released its 2021 year in review for the Epic Games Store. They ended the year with 194 million EGS accounts. That's up 34 million from the end of 2020.
That's pretty good.
Daily active users peaked at 31.1 million.
Okay.
Yep.
That's respectable.
Yep. Concurrent users peaked at 13.2 million. Now, to put that in context, Steam hit a new record of 28 million.
Right. But Steam also has the benefit of being the larger storefront.
And being the first mover.
Right.
So
Not that matters if you look at Sony and PlayStation Now.
Right. First mover advantage, if you do something with it, it matters. So, December MAUs were up 11% to 62 million.
Very nice.
They doubled their catalog in 2021, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit. There are now 917 games on EGS. Now, that sounds like a lot until you think about how many games are on Steam, which is tens of thousands.
Yeah, if we haven't reached 100,000 yet, I would be surprised.
We can go look at that, but I don't know off the top of my head.
I also don't know off the top of my head. As it turns out, there is finite space in my brain meats.
Mm-hmm. Now, engagement is important, but because Epic is still doing free games on a weekly basis, they've got Fortnite. Engagement is one metric that we're looking at, but spend is a very important metric for Epic.
It is.
Users spent $840 million in the Epic Games Store in 2021. Up 20% over the year before.
So, to put that in context, that's not just about games, though, right? That's also in-game purchases through EGS.
So, that's your Fortnite money. That's your Rocket League. That's your Rocket League.
Arbucks.
I don't know what they're called. I can't remember. But it's all that in-game stuff. It's DLC. All that. But Fortnite, of course, being a huge driver there.
Oh, certainly.
So, third-party games represent 36% or about $300 million of that $840 million.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Player spending is up 12% overall.
So,
or for third-party games.
For third-party games. I would imagine that's because they doubled their library.
I think it's partially because of that. I think that a major driver of this is the recurring $10 coupons during many of their sales.
That's true. That $10 coupon is very attractive.
And they also made it very convenient where if you have two items that would have individually been eligible for a $10 coupon, they don't make you go through multiple purchases now. They just award you $10 on each of them if you put them in the cart, which is a new... I think the cart was new in this year.
Yes,
the cart it used to be a single purchase.
Yes, and it was very clunky and annoying.
There were 89 free games during 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Worth a total of $2,120.
It's a very interesting number.
It is. It is. 765 million free games were claimed.
That's impressive.
It is. It's real. It's pretty dang impressive. So there are 194 million EGS accounts. The average, I mean, if you split that up, you're looking at about, what, 3+ games per account that were claimed.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't people claiming all of their account games on a weekly basis?
Because some of us have lives and we forget things because we have ADD.
Set a reminder. Free games!
Do you have any idea how many reminders I... You know what? I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you about me because you know about me. You've seen my stack of notebooks. You understand that my brain is a very disorganized mess. So there's your answer.
Should I be because reminding you to download your games every Thursday?
Maybe.
Oh, okay. I will do that.
Oh.
Here's what's interesting. You know, we talked about the free games and we talked about the amount of money that was spent and how it varied when that all came out during the Epic versus Apple trial.
Right.
This is an interesting statistic. 76 free games broke their peak concurrent records on PC. Not on Epic, but on PC.
Interesting.
So they're motivating users. Now you're saying, okay, well, what good is that if you gave the game away for free and there's no DLC? You're essentially... Remember, when you claim a free game, there's the checkbox. So a lot of people are probably checking the box to start getting direct communications from developers. In fact, there have been a couple of times I've checked out where it has not been an option at all, it's just, this is happening. And I'm wondering if they have changed, if some of the developers that they're working with are like, the only way we're going to do this is if, you know. But I don't know how that would work because you'd have to authorize it, right? Because of like GDPR and opt-in.
I would imagine that it gives them the opportunity to send that initial email. Where you could opt into the list.
Yeah. But I think that this is a really interesting way to build an audience. So that when game two comes out, or whatever the next game is, game five, game seven,
yeah,
you've got this built-in audience. We're like, oh, I love that developer. I got that game for free. I'd never played one of their games before. I got it on EGS. Now I'm really interested in their next game.
It was a hidden gem for me.
Yep, absolutely.
A sleeper hit for me of the year, for sure. And I think that there's a big opportunity in that for decent marketing angles. And at the same time, you know, it's part and parcel with building the audience. This is we're in user attraction stage here.
Right. So what's interesting is developers are getting paid some amount of money. Of course, it's all over the place based on what we know.
Of course.
And this is serving
likely as guaranteed minimums.
Mm-hmm. Well, depends. For exclusives, yes. But we know from the Epic versus Apple, there's actually cash.
Right. Yeah.
When you're talking about a game that's already been out and everything. In fact, we've seen a couple of games come back as free games a second time.
It is very interesting. I wonder if it's because they did particularly well, or if they, you know, they just wanted another crack at more
now
eyeballs.
Or they were early on and now there are a ton more accounts. And
yeah. I think that's really smart.
I think that is certainly one thing. So, yeah, one of my big takeaways is cash user engagement, user acquisition,
mm-hmm.
being a big beat for developers that are participating in that free game giveaway.
Yeah.
The other piece of this is just general growth in the EGS ecosystem.
Okay, walk me through that.
So again, we talked about, just to recap, they picked up 34 million accounts, bringing that to 194.
Right.
We're talking about 11% growth in MAUs in December.
Right.
We're talking about doubling the catalog of games, which I have a funny feeling the word we're going to be using a lot this year is flywheel. Because again, you've got this situation where you get more content, you get more people in the door, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Right? So player spending up overall 20%, and third-party developers are getting a big chunk of that. They're getting a third of it. Of course, Fortnite is the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. V-Bucks, V-Bucks, V-Bucks. So we saw a lot of growth in EGS. Is it at the level that we expect out of Steam in terms of users? No. And it's also not there yet in terms of underlying technology and what it offers to developers and players. So there are some new development features coming, or developer features coming in 2022.
Okay, so what's coming?
They are going to fully release their self-publishing tools, which are currently in beta. Now, what's really interesting here is that when Epic launched, they really focused on the curated experience. This is why they're only at 917 games on the platform as of December 31st, right, or on the storefront as of December 31st, 2021. Right. I am very curious to see what self-publishing does for the library, how big that's going to grow, what the profile of games look like. We're starting to see a lot of big games on EGS, but not every big game. I think that Epic would be glad to have more big, you know, more big AAA games on its platform. They have a couple of very loyal publishers. Square Enix is loyal. Ubisoft is pretty loyal. I'm trying to think, like, who else is launching, but I don't think Capcom has launched any games yet. I don't think Sega's launched any games yet. So it says to me, all right, well, they've got Square Enix, which is fantastic. In fact, most of the Square Enix East games are launching onto Epic, not just in the West. So that's super interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're looking at here is on the big publisher front, how Epic is going to woo the big publishers that haven't worked with them yet. I think EA has now. Activision is not. Microsoft hasn't really yet. Take-Two has, because I know there's Take-Two games on the system, on the platform, or storefront.
Yep.
I'm screwing that up.
That's okay. And it's because we talk about platforms more often than not, but when we're talking about, you know, the platform of PC, of personal computers.
Yep.
There are multiple storefronts. Yeah. And it's hard to keep track of that language in our own heads because it's like, but there is a difference.
And Steam is this weird animal where it has platform-like features.
It's kind of both.
And some of those are coming to EGS this year.
Oh, okay.
So, and we'll talk about that in a second. They're looking to improve their developer portal, and they're looking to standardize PC store crossplay. So that means if you own a game anywhere on PC... And this goes back to our platform storefront conversation. Whether that's Steam, Epic Game Store, Windows Store, GOG. And I think those are the big ones, right?
Although,
potentially for all the Amazon launcher that you get free games.
For all intents and purposes, though, GOG is not what I would consider a big launcher. Especially considering that it's kind of a drain on resources for CD Projekt.
Yeah. And we know that none of the games that they launch on their own storefront are exclusive to that storefront. So yeah. Witcher Cyberpunk launched elsewhere.
Yeah.
But if you own it on GOG, it'll be cross-play across the board. So that's really interesting. On the player side, there's some stuff that we're looking at that is, again, tending towards that storefront platform-ish hybrid feature thing that Steam has going on. They are planning on continuing their weekly free games in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
They are planning on improving player profiles. Now, Steam has a profile page.
Yeah. They've had a profile page for years.
Where many you can view them. Your achievements, playtime, and more. So, again, looking at some of those things that Steam offers to users.
Sure.
Improvements to the library and download management. Again, this is one of those things that I think Steam has gotten even better about recently.
Their improved downloads management page is really quite good. I remember when it used to be so clunky and horrifying. But they've really done a ton of work on that UI.
Mm-hmm. And now here's a big one. Voice support coming at the storefront level that's game agnostic, just like Steam
has. So just like Steam has.
Again, that's one of those platformy features, right?
Right, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the technology will look like for that, considering how much middleware they own.
Yeah, user ratings and polls. Now, they have very sharply stayed away from user ratings. Now, I think they have an open critic score, potentially, on some of their store pages, but in terms of, like, I'm interested to see how they're going to cope with the first time review bombing happens ratings.
Yeah.
Game hubs with game updates and publisher news. Again,
I think that's great.
Yep. And again, that's good for developers. It's also something we've seen Steam get a lot better with the new Steam desktop client.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good for players, especially, you know, not just good for developers when they're trying to push out news, but good for players that are looking to, you know, keep updated on their favorite games.
Absolutely. And then expanding the Epic Wallet for the rest of the world. Again, that's really important. When we were at GDC, I sat in on the Steam business update And it was really interesting mm-hmm. to hear about all the different ways people engage with purchasing on the Steam storefront and all the things that need to be done with that. So the big one was having cash cards. Having cards was really important because people used to have to make their purchase online and then go to pay for it in person.
Yeah. In some countries.
Yeah. So
or in some territories.
So that was one of the things they needed to navigate. Also, Steam subsidizes a lot of the cost of putting those point cards or well, yeah, I guess we still call them point cards. I think that's what Matt calls them when he does his reports and okay. stuff for MPD.
Sure.
At least that's what they used to be called back when it was, you know, back when Xbox points and all that stuff. You know, those are not inexpensive. There's a huge cost associated with it. I think it's like $10 or something like that, $5 to $10 to get one of those cards in, and that's subsidized by Steam.
Sure.
And that's something that they tout for doing for their developers to make sure that people can purchase developers' games.
Sure.
So big takeaway here for me, Epic Games Store still has a lot of ground to make up when it comes to competing with Steam, but money is a big thing. Free games are huge, and those repeating $10 coupons, really, really powerful. Yeah. Very easy to use, very attractive. When you look at the way people talk about things during the sale, Wario is a good one, Wario64. When he tweets out what a game costs, he says like X with $10 coupon on the Epic Game Store. So if a game is usually $25, it'll be like, oh, it's $14.99 after $10 coupon. And since those coupons repeat, that applies to everybody, not just, oh, if you didn't use your coupon yet.
Right.
So yeah, that's not the only thing that's going on with Epic, though.
No, Epic apparently is also having an Avengers Endgame moment, which is absolutely wild. So in our show notes, because Mike prepared this set of the show notes, which I just love, I'm sitting here and I'm reading this and I'm like, you know, I've read this like 3 times already, including when I originally read them several days ago. And it's still beautiful. So the portals are opening. And 35 states' attorneys general have stepped through to support the company in its antitrust battle against Apple. That, like, I love this because it's so hyperbolic and so bonkers. I love it.
Yep.
I love it so much.
I just thought it was so funny. I'm thinking about this, like, Tim Sweeney standing there and all these portals opening and state's attorneys general.
On your left.
On your left, yeah. Oh boy. But this whole thing is really interesting, and I'm wondering if it actually ends up swaying the way the appeals hearing goes.
We'll have to see. According to the amicus briefs filed for the appeal at the Ninth Circuit, the states believe that the district court did not interpret the first section of the Sherman Antitrust Act correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So specifically, the states believe that the contracts like Apple's, which are unilateral rather than bilateral,
mm-hmm.
are subject to the Sherman Act, and excluding them, quote, makes bad antitrust policy. So, Mike,
yeah,
before we go any further into this story, there are a few things that I'd like to get redefined.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, let's talk about the Sherman Antitrust Act, sure. because this is a distinctly American piece of legislature.
Sure. This is the underpinning of everything we talk about when we talk about monopolies in the United States.
Right.
This is the law that governs how we look at anti-competitive behavior, how we look at antitrust behavior, how we look at monopolistic behavior. So the fact that these 35 states' attorneys general are saying, hey, when the lower court looked at this in the Northern District of California,
mm-hmm.
Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers made a mistake.
Interesting.
Is what they're saying. Mm. They are saying that she did not interpret this properly.
Interesting.
Again, this isn't, if Apple or if Epic were making this argument by themselves, I think it would be okay. Well, of course, that's what they're going to try to argue. But when you have 35 states step forward, that's huge. That's enormous.
It is. And the other part of this that's really interesting to me is calling out the kind of contract mm-hmm. that Apple. Because that they push on developers on their platform. So it is unilateral.
Yes.
Which means that it solely benefits Apple.
Right. Now, bilateral contracts are when we typically talk about contracts, we talk about an exchange of goods or services.
Exactly.
Right? So I give you money, you give me goods or services.
Totally.
And when you are making a purchase, let's say purchasing a house.
Any particular reason why you're talking about purchasing a house,
Michael? I'm just letting everybody know that in early March, the show's going to have to go on a couple weeks hiatus because we're moving. So when you purchase a house, you enter into a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And the contract is not a simple contract, but it does boil down to me give you money, you give me place to live.
Please to give me house.
Right. So, but anytime you sign a contract, when we sign a contract in our work, we are going to provide consulting work for money.
Yeah.
Right? That's when we look at contracts that are bilateral, that's what it means. Unilateral means Apple sets the terms and you have
to... And they don't waver. It is sketched in stone.
Right. And like terms of service, you know, you are accepting these terms of service.
And in order to continue to use this product or service, yep, you need to abide by these rules.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think that that's a really important thing for us to talk about, why a unilateral versus a bilateral contract does make this more interesting in terms of its context.
The reason why, and this is why I don't think... Again, if it was just Epic making this argument, I think it would be something we look at and go, okay, well, this is the legal maneuvering.
Because, of course.
35 states' attorneys generals, though, interpreting this huge piece of federal legislation in this way. I'm wondering how this is going to sway, because, again, this is a federal matter.
It
right?
is a federal matter,
This
yes.
is a federal antitrust matter. These are 35 states weighing in. I know that, as a Canadian, our weird separation of state and federal... Yeah,
honey, there's nowhere else in the world like this.
I know. So going back to the founding of the United States, of course, there was this big push for states' rights versus overreach by the federal government. Part of that came from coming from perceived and actual tyranny under the British monarchy. Mm-hmm. So that's part of why they did not want centralized power in the government. The other part, as you may know, is racism. So...
Just
slavery and racism was a big piece of the whole states' rights movement.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that that persists today is part vestige of a time that should have been corrected long ago. But it's so ingrained in the way the United States operates jurisdictionally that this is going to become very interesting. So what the reason why this might not fly is because, and this is why, based on what I read, and we linked to a really good Ars Technica piece, I believe, in the show notes, is that if you include unilateral contracts here, when, for any unilateral contract, you are casting a very wide net. And typically, unilateral contracts, when looked at through the lens of the Sherman Antitrust Act, from what I understand, it's typically when you have one party that is conspiring with another company to control trade.
Right. And that's my understanding of it as well.
So there's no conspiracy here. It's not like Apple is coordinating with Google in order to control the marketplace.
No, they're just controlling their rather hefty portion of the mobile marketplace.
Right, because they, and this is Apple's argument, because they were first mover, because they invested all of this money in creating this ecosystem, you know, they're just being enriched by their own ingenuity.
Oh, man.
And that...
the whole meritocracy nonsense underpinning that argument is making me a little nauseated.
So, I mean, that's kind of the big thing here, is whether or not unilateral contracts as a whole are looked at in the appeal as being subject to the Sherman Antitrust Act...
I think it's contextual, quite frankly.
Or if the Ninth Circuit looks at it and says, no, YGR got it right, and Apple's not conspiring with anybody, and therefore we wouldn't look at unilateral contracts. Remember, though, when I talked about, actually, I don't know if I talked about it on the show or not, when we were talking, there was so much happened. Microsoft and Activision, and how there was some talk about Microsoft, Sony welcoming Microsoft's Game Pass onto PlayStation.
I think we might have touched on that during our Boss Baby episode.
Yeah. I think that that is where you start running into those potential allegations of conspiring with another company to control trade through unilateral. Because then you have a very similar situation, right? You have a marketplace.
Sure.
You have users who are engaged in a unilateral contract.
Yeah.
And now suddenly you have two companies, two of the biggest companies, two of the three biggest companies.
Mm-hmm.
who are engaging in a practice where they are tying together their mutual success. Then I think you start to run afoul. And that's why I don't think you're ever going to see... I don't ever want to say never, because who knows. But I don't think it's likely that we're going to see Game Pass, Microsoft's Game Pass on Sony platforms.
Probably not.
So the states have also shared their concern about the lower court's estimation of Apple's potential harm to the public. Again, we talk about super competitive profits. Again, whether or not Apple started out as a monopoly, or it's because they built up the iOS ecosystem in a way that enriches them because of their ingenuity or because of their investment or because of whatever. What the states are saying is that with the volume of profits, the huge install base, that Apple could very easily flex its muscle and wield huge benefit from its market position.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
I do too.
Yeah.
I don't know that that last point is enough to sway the appeals court. I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
I am too. It continues to be a very interesting journey learning about American legislation as an immigrant. That's for sure.
And I want to be clear, I'm still learning as well. Like, these are always really great opportunities for me to learn and research. And I will say that when we cover stories like this, the amount of research that I do as I'm writing up the show notes to try to make sure I really grok everything that's going on in very these antitrust stuff is so complex.
It is, absolutely, because antitrust and anti-competitive and monopolistic behavior is so nuanced.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I got it 100% right.
So if this is an area of expertise for you, come talk to us, because we want to listen. We want to learn.
Absolutely. But wait, we actually have two more epic stories, but they're not in this part of the show. It's time for Investment Interlude, where we talk about mergers and acquisitions and investments and SPACs and pipes. But no SPACs and pipes today, thankfully.
No, just money.
Money!
All right, so we got a couple of pieces of epic investment news today. The Fortnite maker has opened a new studio in Poland founded by veterans of the demo scene.
Do we need to explain what the demo scene is?
I think we probably need to explain what the demo scene is.
Oh, I'm turning to dust. Okay, so way back when I was in college... the demo scene essentially is creating self-executing applications that are effectively digital art projects.
Kind of, yeah.
They're music and graphics, and it was just intended...
They're weird, glorious experiences that existed for a very short moment in time, but that if you were part of it, you'll never forget it.
I saw a bunch. Like, I got it.
I did too. Absolutely.
I love the demo scene.
Good old demo scene. So, Mike, what else is going on here?
So, this new studio, which is going to be led by Michael Staniszewski and his team from Plastic, which made Bound, Datura, and Linger in Shadows, which were effectively demo scene projects that were released on consoles.
Yeah,
right?
Linger in Shadows. I forgot about that.
So this is a really cool fit. So they are founding Epic's new studio in Poland. They're going to be working on, quote, original standalone experiences that push the boundaries of graphics and game development.
Okay, I'm very interested.
If Epic is funding a new demo scene, I'm in. Like,
it just
that's
sounds
cool.
Really cool. It sounds very, very cool. So additionally, Epic has led a $20 million round of funding Inspire Animation Studios, which is using Unreal Engine for animation projects. The funding will be used to grow the team, invest in technology, and increase infrastructure. The investment gives Epic a seat on the board. Spire was founded by Ratatouille producer Brad Lewis. And, you know, the word metaverse is thrown around a lot in the GameSpeed interview. But at this point, that word doesn't mean anything. And it's not a useful descriptor.
Yeah. So it's talking about, like, the audience for the metaverse.
Uh-huh.
And
I read it.
Metaverse movies. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
It's not a thing.
I thought this was really interesting that Epic putting its money behind animation and movies. We talked about the use of Unreal Engine.
Oh, it's super important for special effects and ensuring that computer graphics remain bleeding edge for cinema.
Yeah. If you are here expecting us and looking for us to talk about the Sony acquisition of Bungie, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we'll actually be covering that in line with Sony's earnings. So stay tuned in a couple of days for the earnings episode.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about it there. It's very interesting how they're structuring it, We have thoughts.
We do. There's so much analysis.
But that's not the only big acquisition that people were talking about this week.
No, in kind of a shocking but not shocking turn, Wordle has been acquired. So the New York Times has purchased everybody's favorite web game for, you know, a low seven-figure deal.
I like this for Josh Wardle.
I do too, because he's, you know, he's a lone developer hanging out in Brooklyn who wanted to make something cool for, I think, his wife. Mm-hmm. And
because she loves word games.
Because she loves word games. And it's just, it's so interesting. And Josh went on to Twitter and talked about the deal a whole bunch and thanked everyone involved, you know, was super humble. And, you know, according to Wardle, the New York Times is aligned with his values, and he believes that the media corporation will be a good steward for scaling Wordle in the future. Yeah. And what the New York Times came back and said was, you know, something along the lines of, this is going to help us grow our subscriber base. I don't see how that happens. I don't see how Wordle is going to be scaled in any meaningful way by the New York Times. But I am so happy for Josh Wardle. Congratulations on getting your bag, dude, because that's rad. We love to see indies win.
Especially after that whole shitty thing with that app creator.
Oh, the clones and stuff? It was absolutely ridiculous. But you know what? I'm really happy for Josh Wardle, and I've really enjoyed playing Wordle.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's a big hit in our household, and we compare strategies and how we handle things every day, and I don't know when we will stop playing it. I'm sure we will.
Yep.
But so far, so good. So anyway, good job, Josh.
Yep, and the Times says it's going to remain free for the time being, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, at some point they are going to put it behind a paywall, I would imagine, but nobody knows when. We don't have any information about the deal other than it was low seven figures, so.
Yep. Alrighty. MTG has sold off ESL Gaming Group for $1.05 billion to Savvy Gaming Group. So ESL is an esports league, right?
No, I've never heard of it.
Nope.
You didn't interview them. I've definitely never spoken to anyone at ESL before.
Yeah.
Never.
Interestingly, though, at the same time, Savvy Gaming Group acquired Faceit for about $500 million.
Interesting.
So they're going to combine them into one comprehensive esports organization that handles both professional tier gaming and more grassroots competition, because Faceit handles tournaments and community.
Yeah, for sure. But there's a problem.
There is. Because of course there is. Savvy Gaming Group is funded by the Saudi government.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yep. And of course, this group and the government has been under fire in the past due to the Saudi government's track record on human rights, including the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. So, yeah. Also, speaking of the Saudi government, its public investment fund just disclosed that it had acquired minority stakes in both Capcom and Nexon. Both investments are more than 5% in each company, making the holdings across both worth more than $1 billion. The PIF is a $500 billion fund that also owns pieces of Activision Blizzard for now.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't after the merger, or after the acquisition, rather.
Sure.
Because they're going to get their payoff. EA, Take-Two, and more. And I believe they own SNK now.
They do, yeah. They straight out own SNK.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
That's an actual nightmare. Okay, so moving right along, Apogee has accepted external investment for the first time in the company's very long history.
Yes, of course. What a winding road for Apogee, which 3D Realms, which Apogee, which 3D Realms.
I don't even know.
Fight with Randy Pitchford over Duke Nukem.
I don't want to talk about it. It's too much. It's way too much. So let's just talk about this specific investment. If you want to go read up on Apogee's very interesting journey, there are plenty of places that have talked about Apogee. So EWTP Tech Innovation Fund is investing $5 million into Apogee. And according to the press release, Apogee will be using the money to publish more indie games.
All right. That's cool. I know they announced their first game already, right?
They did, yeah.
Cool. Kakao Games has announced a $20 million investment into Frost Giant Studios. We discussed Frost Giant and founders Tim Morton and Tim Campbell way back in October 2020 when they were founded, and again in March of last year when they raised their first $5 million.
That's a huge investment.
It is. Morton and Campbell are both Blizzard vets, and they worked on StarCraft II and WarCraft III respectively. They're working on an RTS. Big shock.
Cool.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Interesting.
Could be very interesting. All right. So Exit Plan has completed its third investment round. So that's Exit Plan Games. Tencent joins Sisu Game Ventures, Smok VC, One Two Play, and Venture Incorporated. Exit Plan, based in Warsaw, was founded in 2019 by Damien Monnier and I guess Jose Teixeira? Yes. Mm-hmm. Both formerly of Techland and CD Projekt Red. So I went and I looked them up and I looked up their studio and the things that they've been working on. So the studio's first game is called Bang On Balls.
You know, I've heard this name.
No. It is, quote, an oddball 3D platforming game with a collect-a-thon spin.
You gotta catch all those balls.
Gotta catch them all, get them balls. The game is out in early access on Steam and will also be coming to Xbox. No details were provided about the amount of money raised in this funding round.
Bang on balls.
Bang them on. Moving on.
I just wanna...
Nope.
I just gotta...
Nope.
But...
Nope.
Oh,
move on. Okay.
Nexters has announced a combined $100 million acquisition of three game companies. Cubic Games, developer of mobile FPS Pixel Gun 3D, was acquired for $70 million cash in newly issued shares. RJ Games, developer of puzzle RPG Puzzle Breakers, was acquired for $15 million cash plus a $35 million earnout.
Dang.
If they meet their targets. And Royal Ark, developer of survival RPG games Dawn of Zombies.
Dawn
of Zombies was purchased for $4.95 million cash. Nexters is based in Cyprus and has ambition to be a key player in the Russian-speaking region. We've talked about them before.
We have indeed. So you know what we're going to do, just real quick, because we have so many investment stories. We just did a couple of quick hits for investment for these two stories because there wasn't enough meat here to really
say too
much.
Oh, no, it's the rest of these stories.
Oh, the rest of them.
Yeah, we're just going to fly through them.
All right, we're going to move. All right, so we are in investment quick hits.
Investment bonus round!
Investment bonus round! Thor Fredriksson, the creator behind QuizUp and Trivia Royale, is working on a new casual mobile MMO called Rocky Road. Rocky Road has raised $2.5 million in seed funding led by Crowberry Capital and Sisu Game Ventures with participation from Bragiel Brothers. Sandbox, which is a London-based digital learning thing, I guess? I don't know. That's what they talked about in their press release. has acquired PlayKids, which is one of the leading children's edutainment platforms in Brazil. PlayKids' majority owner, Movile, will join Sandbox as a minority shareholder.
NetEase has announced the opening of Negoshi Studio, led by Yakuza creator Toshihiro Negoshi. Other founders also come from Sega's Ryu Ga Gotoku Studio. I can never say that easily. The studio will be working on console games for a worldwide audience. This is cool.
Could be neat. A group of former Activision Blizzard executives have launched a new studio in Paris called New Tales. The founding team includes CEO Cedric Machal, formerly senior vice president at Activision Blizzard, COO Benoit Dufour, formerly senior vice president at Activision Blizzard, chief growth officer Delphine Lacour, formerly senior director at Blizzard EMEA, and chief content officer Emmanuel Aubert, formerly publishing director at Blizzard EMEA. All four helped found Blizzard EMEA in 2004.
Now, didn't Blizzard downsize in Europe?
They did. They shuttered, I think, almost everything.
So that's probably
And it was
what
absolutely
here.
Everything in France that got shut down.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Medify has raised $25 million led by Tiger Global Management and Alexis Ohanian 776. The company provides one-to-one coaching opportunities with professional gamers for people looking to increase their skill. Go on their website. You look at the games that you're wanting to get better at, whether that's Fortnite or Call of Duty.
That's cool.
Etc. And you find a coach to help you out.
That's neat.
And you pay for it.
I love it.
In a bilateral contract.
we're gonna be talking about bilateral contracts for a while.
Yeah, I'm gonna make it weird, probably.
I don't doubt that. Virtuous has acquired UK-based Volmi Games, which employs 140 people, provides 2D and 3D art services. Volmi has worked on games like Diablo II Resurrected, Metro Exodus, Smite, and more. No terms were disclosed.
VR studio Alta has announced a $12.4 million round of funding led by Makers Fund and Andreessen Horowitz, Pioneer Fund, Boost VC, Amuro D, and Thomas Rice also participating. Alta calls itself a, quote, metaverse studio, and released VR RPG A Township Tale in 2021.
Okay. Lost Lake Studios, founded by StarCraft lead designer James Finney, Joe Pickup, formerly of Rockstar and ArenaNet, and Mark Portoff, who was an engineer on H1Z1 and Quantum Conundrum, has raised $5 million in a round led by Bitcraft Ventures with participation from Lightspeed Venture Partners, Moon Holdings, and 1UP Ventures. Funds will be used to expand the team.
Last one. Tilting Point has announced a majority stake acquisition of Korea-based AN Games. They are behind the massively multiplayer strategy game Astro Kings.
Yeah.
They also partnered with Tilting Point. Remember, Tilting Point got into a really cool new partnership or publishing structure?
I love what Tilting Point is doing. I think their business model is fascinating. I think the people that are running Tilting Point are fascinating. It's just such a cool way of doing business.
Mm-hmm. So not only is this good because this gives them Astro Kings and all of that great stuff, but it gives Tilting Point access to AN Games publishing resources in Asia.
That's huge.
So that helps them enter that market a little bit more fully.
Yeah.
And that is all of our very many investment interlude stories.
And now it's time for a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we are back! Hey Mike, what time is it?
It's time for Quick Hits!
Oh, it's so beautiful. That's like 2 weeks in a row.
Why, thank you.
That has been genuinely beautiful. So, Mike, what do we got first?
Business Insider is reporting that Google is about to do the entirely thinkable. That Stadia is about to be fully deprioritized. Google is apparently attempting to shop its streaming tools around under the brand name Google Stream. Potential customers include Peloton, Bungie, and AT&T. Google.
Hold it.
Now, I do want to say that the Google Stadia account stepped forward and like, no, this isn't true. We have a lot of free games coming and stuff. I don't know. The funny thing is, like, this story came out and I went back to your trends analysis. And we have been talking about this for a while. And then I think Nick Stat popped up and he and I were talking about what it's going to look like when Google does eventually send Stadia to the graveyard.
Like, they've sent actual useful technology to the graveyard.
Remember Reader?
Yes. I loved Reader. Remember FeedBurner?
Yeah.
Remember Google Wave?
Yeah. So,
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yeah. I think this is going to be very interesting because if they had gone with a subscription model.
Yeah.
It's very easy to sunset that, right?
Yeah.
You just stop charging people. The games go away. It's over.
Yeah.
You sold people licenses to play these games. What are you going to do? Because clearly you're not doing well.
No.
The tech is apparently very good.
See, and that's the thing that I talked about on Twitter as well, is that the technology that underpins Stadia, of course it's excellent.
Yep.
It's been engineered by Google.
Yes.
So, yes, the tech is going to be phenomenal, but their business model is just... Why?
Look, I don't know...
Who is that business model
I don't
for?
Know who's at the top of Stadia and came up with that business model.
Awkward.
It's not... That's not the bread.
Mike, start trying to make fetch happen.
So here's the thing, everybody. That's the bread means that it's awesome. But then it works in so many ways. Like, that bread's kind of moldy. That's soggy bread.
This is awful. You're trying to make fetch happen.
I am trying to make fetch happen. What's the next quick hit?
I want to talk about Code Coven because I love talking about Code Coven. So this is a venture that is sponsored by Epic Games. So Code Coven is offering a zero-cost education for people of marginalized genders. And they are going to be accepting new students and new applications until February 8th, I believe. So this is called Introduction to Game Making with Unreal Engine, and it's an 8-week course that's both remote and part-time.
Mm.
It's being offered to trans and cisgendered women, trans men, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people. Importantly, most important of all of this is not just the skills that you learn. The course also includes career development workshops. That one's big.
Yes, absolutely. Like, it's one thing to have the tools, but you need a path in.
This is what we talk about with regards to solid DEI work. There always has to be a trajectory forward.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are attracting talent, you have to nurture your talent. If you're especially if you are looking to attract and nurture diverse talent, this is where it starts. This is where the work starts, is with programs like what Code Coven does. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that I get their press releases. They are just such lovely humans. So, quote, with strong enough allies, we've been able to focus on redesigning these invisible systems to be able to work towards parity and a kinder, inclusive environment for all. And this is the CEO and founder of Code Coven, Tara Mustafa.
That's freaking awesome. That is I love bread. It. That is absolutely
stop
the
trying to make fetch happen. That's You're ruining it.
Also, this is pretty bread. Microsoft.
Michael! Stop it!
Microsoft is making changes to Xbox Live Gold and Game Pass subscriptions following a ruling by the UK Competition and Markets Authority regarding auto-renewing subscriptions. Microsoft is going to roll out the following changes worldwide, not just in the UK. Better information upfront about auto-renewing policies, pricing, and how to receive a refund after an accidental auto-renew. Refunds on 12-month auto-renew contracts, if requested.
Okay.
Auto termination of inactive membership, so you haven't used your membership in a year.
Okay.
They're not going to auto charge you. Clearer communication about price increases. Sony and Nintendo are also being investigated by the UK Competition and Markets Authority regarding this. These are fantastic changes. I will tell you that there is one platform where I suddenly renewed and I didn't want to because I can always get a cheaper year membership online than I can by purchasing it directly.
I wonder what he could be talking about.
I don't mean to call them out, so I'm not going to, but it's one of those three companies. I'll let you guess which one.
Oh, it's beautiful. I just love it.
Hit me up in DMs if you have any guesses about which company I'm talking about. And I will tell you if you get it right. That's the bread.
Stop it! Oh, it's the worst. All right, moving on. Moving right along. Ubisoft is ending its Battle Royale game, Hyperscape. Which, it's too bad, because I know that, you know, lots of developers worked on this game, and I feel bad for the folks on it. The game itself will be sunset on April 28th. They just could not compete with Valorant, and quite frankly, that's not surprising.
Was it? It was combination of a hero shooter and a battle royale, though, right? So it was like a very vertical.
Yeah, it was. It was extremely vertical. It looked really interesting, but I tried it once and I didn't really care for it.
And it had a very high skill floor.
Yes, and it required. Yeah, so what Mike's talking about there is that it just required you to be good at the game.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
Yes.
Have excellent... It was for very young people, is what we're saying. Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Sega is getting out of the arcade business entirely. The company's divesting the remainder of its 15% share in that business, selling to Genda, which was the buyer for the first 85% back in late 2020. Yep. Following this, Sega Arcades will be no more. They'll be rebranded under the Gaigo name.
Man... End of an era.
Like, after the Akihabara, like, arcade shut down, and...
Yeah, I mean, like, that was really sad, because that Sega arcade in Akihabara was just... Yeah. I mean, obviously, Mike and I have never been to Japan, but, like, that's iconic.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Hollywood, speaking of iconic. Hollywood has taken a renewed interest in the video game world lately. Not only is the Uncharted movie due out next week...
Or 2 weeks from now... Batman's next week and then Uncharted? I think I had it wrong. I had him confused in my head when I wrote this.
Due out at some point in the very near future.
This month.
Yes, but other game-based films have also been announced, including It Takes Two.
And they just announced, 5 million units sold.
Yeah, it's huge.
Just a quick aside on that. That's an EA Originals game, and the way EA Originals works is once the game recoups its costs, 100%
goes to the developer. Yeah, it's really...
Net goes to the developer. So I'm sure that, like, platform fees come out of that and stuff. But I'm certain. 100% net going to the developer, that's, like, EA Originals is fantastic.
It really, really is. And honestly, I didn't understand why it takes to one game of the year. I get it now.
Yeah, because you and James have been playing it.
Yeah, we've been playing it, and it is genuinely fantastic. So they've also... So back to our original conversation about Hollywood looking to make more video game movies. They've also been looking at System Shock, American McGee's Alice, and a project teased by Dwayne Johnson that is rumored to be Call of Duty.
Interesting. I know that they had an entertainment division at Activision, and they've been trying to make that fetch happen.
I feel like Call of Duty is based on world, like, based on real.
I don't know.
But I'm gonna break my brain.
And the funny thing is, like, Fortnite would have been a much better fit because he's actually in Fortnite.
I don't even know what to do about this. Actually, you could make a pretty cool Fortnite movie it's actually got a pretty cool story.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's a thing that happened.
Yeah. All right. Twitch and Universal Music Group have come to an agreement that will bring more artists and labels to the streaming platform. This is similar to Twitch's agreements with Warner Music Group and National Music Publishers Association. We've covered that extensively.
Yeah.
Universal Music Group will be following Twitch's new music reporting process for unauthorized use of their music on the platform. The new reporting process is, according to Twitch, more flexible and forgiving than traditional DMCA requests. You get one warning before you start racking up penalties. Explain to me how that's more forgiving.
Don't know.
Yep. Essentially, this deal makes no real difference to streamers, and as you can't stream unauthorized music, folks. This isn't like the Facebook deal.
No, this is nothing like the Facebook deal. And you know what? The unauthorized music portion of this also includes in-game music.
Yeah. Which...
So this continues to suck, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, here. You're right. I see this in the notes here. Manda writes, this is not the bread.
I did it! Michael! Gosh darn you! Boo! All right, Discord is starting to roll out PlayStation integration. Once you link up your accounts, if you're playing a PlayStation game, it will now show up on Discord.
I am wondering. I wonder. Now, you remember when Discord was shopping itself around, you see?
But also, no.
I don't think Microsoft can't do it right now. I mean, I guess they could.
No, it's I don't not think a it's, game. Not no, a it's publisher. Not a good fit. It's not a good fit. Like, it is, but it isn't. Like, they already have Skype. Like, they...
Do they?
I mean, nobody uses it, but...
Yeah, that's kind of my point.
It served its
Zoom purpose. Ate Skype's lunch.
That's because Zoom is easier to use than Skype. You know what? You make fun of it, but you and I spent a lot of our lives on Skype I moved here.
Netflix is partnering with Rocket Ride, which enabled two games for the streaming service's mobile app, Domino's Cafe and Knittens.
That actually
like
sounds...
kittens with an extra N after the
that can. Sounds adorable.
Knittens. Rocket Ride is based in Montreal, and they're going to be teaming up with Netflix to bring even more titles to subscribers via Netflix's mobile app.
Awesome. What's going on with CG Project?
Okay. Buckle up. I have thoughts.
I know, which is why I'm inviting you to share those thoughts.
So you might recall that CD Projekt had started settlement negotiations with U.S.-based shareholders that had filed a class action suit over, let's go with lies, told about Cyberpunk 2077 in the run-up to that game's launch. That ultimately led to critical, public, and investor dismay. And I am downplaying this by using the word dismay and not outrage.
Yeah.
There we go. So the settlement, as you might recall, was in negotiations. We had a proposed settlement that hadn't been finalized that will award... Buckle up, $1.8 million.
Wow.
The class.
Wow.
And of course, because this is a settlement and this didn't go to a trial, CD Projekt admits no wrongdoing in this settlement.
Great. What are your thoughts on this? Just real quick.
I don't need them to admit that they did wrong because we have all the proof in the world. And I hope that everybody remembers it when the next game comes out.
That's the one.
Not that I wish that those developers ill. In fact, I wish those developers all the best, and I hope that you are getting the improved work conditions that you so richly deserve and that you are not crunched on whatever you are working on now. But to the management at CD Projekt, shame on you. Come on.
Yeah. That's it. It's just this harmed the developers in so many ways. This harmed your team. This harmed the people that really matter here.
Also, anybody leaving that puts Cyberpunk on their resume when they get into a job interview. They're so how did you do on Cyberpunk? How did that go?
Got any stories for us?
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah. It is.
Also, if you are in that situation, you're interviewing and somebody asks you to tell stories about your past place of employment.
You don't have to.
You don't. No, you just say, I loved working with my team. I am proud of the work we did. Clearly there were challenges, as you know, from, you know, the press and the reception to the game, but I'm thrilled about the work that we did, and I'm really proud to have been part of that team.
Yeah. Make it about the people.
Yes.
Speaking of the people and the lovely people that almost always end up at the Game Devs of Color Expo. Mm-hmm. Man,
I know it's one of your favorite events.
It is one of my favorite events of the year. And like, I love going to this. I learned so much, and the people there are just so wonderful. And now they're starting to include, like, they have a tie-in now with Steam, which means that you can go wishlist a bunch of these games on Steam. You can play their demos. That's how I ended up finding Commonhood, which is just this incredible building simulation where you are constructing a home, essentially, in this broken down warehouse for people that have nowhere else to go. You're building this common hood, which is really cool. So anyway, I love the Game Devs of Color Expo, and it will be back this year. The online event will take place September 15th through 18th and will mark the first of the organization's events as an accredited 501c3 nonprofit.
For those of you who...
Good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. For those of you who don't know what a 501c3 nonprofit is here in the United States, 501c3 is the tax status that you get when you are a charitable organization that can provide tax incentives for those people who make a donation. And I could go on and on and on about the nonprofit structure in the United States because my previous life was in nonprofit arts management, but I'm not going to do that. If you have questions, you can always hit me up on social. Glad to talk to you about it. And those were quick hits. As usual, after quick hits, we have an updated labor report. A couple things have happened since the last time we chatted. It's been a couple weeks. Let's talk about Activision first. As expected, Bobby Kotick and his cronies have refused to recognize the Game Workers Alliance Union of Quality Assurance Employees at Raven. So this is now going to require a National Labor Relations Board election. And, of course, Activision Blizzard is trying hard to bust this unionization effort.
Shocking.
Yeah. The publisher has restructured Raven to embed QA throughout different departments. Now, on the surface, this is not a terrible thing. In fact, QA often wants to be embedded in other teams.
Absolutely. They want to be a part of it because QA doesn't just happen when the code is done. Mm-hmm. You build those use cases and you build those processes and those systems together.
And there's dialogue because usually what happens in the worst format is QA fills out a bug report, they send it up, and it gets kicked back, will not fix, or working as intended, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, because there's too little documentation that explains what's going on, things get obtuse. Yeah. Yep. Listen, go listen to our episode with Kari Toyama, who is incredible and amazing, and talks all about the importance of quality assurance at game studios.
Absolutely. So the fact that this is happening now is intended to support Activision's objection that the union should represent the entire studio.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was QA at Raven that started the ball rolling at the studio because they had a bunch of contractors who were told to move out to the high cost of living area of Madison, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had 12 of them who were let go for no cause while the rest remained full-time employees.
Yep.
It was clearly intended as punishment. Oh, you want to be full-time employees?
You want benefits?
You want to be treated better? oh, well, then these 12 people are going to have to go.
You're going to have to sacrifice something.
Yeah. You know who could sacrifice here? Literally anybody in the C-suite. So, the Communication Workers of America, which is the union that helped found the Game Workers Alliance at Raven, they fired at Activision Blizzard for what that group claims are falsehoods in the company's SEC filings related to the Microsoft acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
In a letter to the SEC, the CWA says that Activision was not truthful in the following statements. Activision stated that it was not aware of any efforts to organize a union. This is clearly not true. Activision stated that there were no ongoing strikes. That,
sounds like bullshrimp. Yep,
and clearly that was not the case. The Raven strike was going on during the Activision acquisition talks with Microsoft, and there's no way that those could have been missed. It was very clear that that was happening. Activision stated that there is no, quote, material unfair labor practice complaint with the NLRB. This is not true. As a complaint about NLRA, which is the National Labor Relations Act, violations was filed by the CWA in September 2021 and was ongoing through the deal announcement. And the CWA has, of course, asked the SEC to investigate.
Yo.
As we discussed with the Microsoft and Activision deal, it's going to get some scrutiny.
But somehow not from the Justice Department.
This is actually not good for Microsoft.
Yeah, this is definitely not good because the FTC, like, I was thinking that the FTC was going to step in to handle the investigation, but everyone was just like, oh, it's no problem, it's entertainment. Yeah, but the FTC also handled what happened with NVIDIA and ARM.
Yep, and that deal is on the precipice of falling apart.
Of course, yeah.
That's a $40 billion deal.
It's huge.
So if the FTC takes a strong look here and says, then this goes away, I actually think that that would be very, very catastrophic for Activision. We are not going to be covering their earnings in depth, but Call of Duty has kind of fallen down quite significantly.
Which is a huge, like, to be fair.
To be fall.
I did that just for you.
I know.
You know, we have friends that worked on this latest Call of Duty game, and we couldn't celebrate them and support them in the ways that they deserve to be supported. And clearly this is reverberating all over the industry and through players. And it's just, it's such a bummer.
Yep. So you've got Call of Duty, which is not doing as well by a lot than it has in years past. You've got Activision, you got Blizzard, which hasn't released a new product, hasn't released a new game, with the exception of the Diablo 2 remake, but a new game.
Right. No. And before that, they had the Warcraft 3
which was remaster, a mess.
Which was a mess.
Which they
it was a travesty.
It was very poorly handled. So if the FTC takes a look at this, it's going to be a harder road for Microsoft.
I think it is going to be, and it's honestly, it's something that I anticipated. It's something that I said that they are going to take a bigger look. They did not take that look at Bethesda because the deal wasn't big enough. But this is almost a $69 billion deal. Listen, if Microsoft loved me, they would have put in another $300 million, made it a cool 69, nice number.
So when I was talking to Adam Sessler on X-Play, I rounded up to 69 just for the chat. And they ate it up. Like, so I just said it a couple times.
They ate up the 69. Oh, no.
That's the
bread.
Oh,
no. I made it bad. I made it worse.
That's the bread.
Nope. I made it worse.
That's the bread.
I hate it.
So yeah, unfortunately, that's not all that happened with regard to Activision this week.
No, it turns out that Activision's VP of QA, Christian Ahrens, posted a union-busting message in Slack.
This busting makes him feel good.
This is the worst kind of busting.
Makes me feel like poop, though. I don't like it.
This is the worst kind of busting. We don't like this. This is not pro-worker. Quote, a union doesn't do anything to help us produce world-class games.
Yeah, there are a lot of choice quotes that I pulled out when I was writing these notes.
Yeah, that's bad. Ahrens claims unions reduce flexibility and can, quote, lead to negative publicity.
I love that Activision's worried about negative publicity now. Like,
where have you been?
What? Why weren't you? You didn't care about it before when you were, like, having, like,
no.
Cube crawls.
Yeah. And therefore, quote, all of this could hurt our ability to continue creating great games. I'm going to give you a quick reality check there, Ahrens. you are already in that position where you are not going to be able to continue creating great games because your people are going to abandon ship.
They are.
The ones that are going to stay are downtrodden. Uh-huh. They are hurting.
Yep.
And they're conflicted. They want to be proud of their work, proud of their teams, proud of the careers that they've led. And they're in this really messed up position where none of that is possible.
Right. And you can't just tell someone, we'll go get another job. It's like,
no,
no,
that's like not a thing. These are people that have families, that have livelihoods that they depend on, because there are not infinite places to work in the game industry. There are not infinite jobs. And in fact, that tends to be the big problem in this industry, is that because it is both so big and so small, like, yeah, it's just, the ability to create great games at Activision Blizzard is already being trampled on.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the vast majority of the people working at Activision Blizzard.
Yep.
So he also tells people that they don't have to vote for a union if an election occurs, even if they filled out the union card.
Hey guys, if I've successfully scared you or insulted you or deterred you from wanting to be part of a union, just know you can always still vote no. Yeah, get bent.
Yeah, screw that. That is just, union busting is bad. Yeah. It's bad.
Yeah.
And we hate it.
It's really bad. All right, some stuff out of Ubisoft, which has done the unthinkable thing here of clearing its studio after Singapore studio after reports of toxicity, harassment, and racial pay disparity. And the racial pay disparity here was higher pay for Europeans that they sent over to open this studio versus the local workers that they hired to work in the studio.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's absolutely,
but don't worry, Ubisoft says everything's fine.
Nobody gives a shit. Send a third party in there.
Well, here's the thing. I think they do need to send a third party, and not one that's run by the government who really wants Ubisoft to be there.
No, it needs to be run by a third party that can actually be objective and take care of the workers. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So the Tripartite Alliance for Fair and Progressive Employment Practices in Singapore investigated and says that Ubisoft Singapore has systems in place to address misconduct or abuse. Having systems in place, and this is something that we have seen over and over now for the past 2 years, right? Having systems
two
in
plus,
place,
but yeah,
does not, well, for Riot, we're looking at 3-4 years, right? But over the last, you know, big chunk of time here, when we have started to really center these issues the way we need to, having systems in place doesn't mean HR is going to follow through with them.
No.
Doesn't mean they're going to be upheld. So the Tripartite Alliance for Fair and Progressive Employment Practicing, well, they showed us that they have process.
But the process doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all.
But wait, there's more.
Oh, I hate that.
This is where things get really bad. So Ubisoft hired a third-party consultant that came in and investigated.
Uh-huh.
And the third-party consultant that Ubisoft hired then presented its report to the TAFEP. And the TAFEP used that report as the basis for its own determination.
Oh,
now,
no.
Now, they said they went in and looked at it, but why would you, like, but having that third party that is hired by Ubisoft to give Ubisoft a clean bill of health, hand that to a government agency, and the government agency just shrugs and says, well, the third party consultant says those processes are in place. Also, they said, well, look, here's the deal. All these pay disparities, oh, those are actually employee experience and seniority. It just so happens that all the white people from Europe who got sent over to start the studio are paid way more than the people from Singapore who they hired locally to work in the studio.
Oh, I hate this so much.
Colonialism is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, jeez Louise. What a nightmare. Can we talk about something else now?
Yeah, we can, but just so you understand, like, the consultant report is where they got all of these justifications for these pay disparities. So I really think the TAFEP did not do its due diligence at the very least, and this seems hinky.
It's gross. It's gross, and it's making me feel nauseated.
But we are
going to
close this week's labor report with good news.
Yes. So Iron Galaxy has been named a Top Workplaces USA 2022 honor.
Woo!
Yay! these awards are given solely based on employee feedback via third-party anonymous surveys.
That's great.
You know, and we talked about Iron Galaxy's focus on employee well-being in our interview with Iron Galaxy co-CEO Chelsea Blasco. That was way back in episode 49. Mm-hmm. But you can find that by searching for Iron Galaxy over on our virtual economy website. So that's virtualeconcast.com.
Congratulations to Iron Galaxy. That's huge news. They're working on, oh, what is the name of that game that we saw at the Game Awards that the Epic is publishing?
Oh gosh, I don't remember.
Hold on, I'm going to look it up because I want to know.
Great, because I'm excited to introduce our recipient of FAFO this week. All right,
just give me one second. Epic Games, Iron Galaxy. I'm typing. This is the bread.
Stop saying that.
Rumbleverse.
Oh, right, Rumbleverse.
It's like the Brawler Royale.
It looks ridiculous. I want to play it.
Yep. All right, Amanda.
All right. This week's Fuck Around and Find Out Award. I'm very excited because I love when we have a FAFO. Each week, or rather each time we actually have contenders for the FAFO award, we will pick the person or company in the game industry that has tended their garden from small seeds of fucking around to sequoia-sized tree of finding out. This week's winner is... Team 17.
Oh boy.
I did not see this one coming because they publish really cool games.
Yeah, this was a weird one.
Yes, it really was. So Team 17 is the latest company to decide that NFTs are A-okay, announcing the launch of a, quote, MetaWorms NFT project. This time, though, not only did consumers voice their incredible displeasure, but a number of Team 17 development partners spoke out. So going under developer AgroCrab said, quote, "We believe NFTs cannot be environmentally friendly or useful and really are just an overall fucking grift. Please do not harass employees at Team 17 or the devs under their umbrella, as this decision seems to have taken everyone off guard and likely came from the very top. AgroCrab was prepared to sever all ties with the publisher."
Yep. Moving out, developer SMG Studio shared its perspective on NFT waste, saying, quote, "SMG does not want anything to do with NFTs." They went on to also detail their environmental commitment, saying that there will be no merchandise or physical editions of their games moving forward. Additionally, they will strive for a reduced booth presence with no more, quote, "stuff" like t-shirts. Further, SMG will be carbon offsetting to the best of its ability.
That's really wonderful.
The only piece of this that strikes me as a little bit of a bummer is physical editions, because I do think that physical media is important.
We do love physical media.
But I understand their approach.
I mean, it's important for preservation purposes.
Yes.
Additionally, Navigante and Playtonic, two other Team 17 partners, also came out against the NFT decision. But wait, there's more. In less than 24 hours, Team 17 canceled the project. This is one of the fastest FAFO turnarounds we've covered, even faster than the Stalker Dev GDC Game World and a voice actor, Troy Baker.
Both of whom... tried to get into NFTs, and then...
it was about anywhere between a few days and a week.
Yeah, it was, and it was loud. Like, people really are. And then there was Gumroad today, which went even further and likely violated California law and the GDPR.
Yeah, there were some laws broken today.
Yeah, and that's not going to go away. Like, ooh, that's real bad. And that was all around NFTs. All of this is around NFTs. But wait, folks, we have a very special moment. Our very first FAFO runner-up.
But if Team 17 hadn't have screwed things up this week, this would have been our very first, potentially our very only, three-time FAFO award winner. Mike, what's going on?
Gary Bowser.
Goddamn Gary Bowser.
He is not the bread. He is moldy bread. He is soggy bread. He's not the bread.
Uh-huh. Make it stop.
Nope. You might recall that Gary Bowser was part of a hacking group called Team Executor. And they ran afoul of Nintendo and the U.S. government. And Mr. Bowser, mm-hmm. no relation, owes Nintendo $10 million in a civil suit settlement.
Mm-hmm.
$4.5 million due to a plea deal with the U.S. government. And oh, by the way, that plea deal does not exempt him from going to prison.
What?!
He is currently facing up to 60 months in prison. That's 5 years. though his lawyers have argued for 19 months. Either way, Bowser is finally going to be in the Slammer. Woohoo!
I knew it. I knew it. It's so good. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. We got through this episode and no creatures were harmed in talking about NFTs.
It's true. Yet. NFTs are not the bread.
I am going to be physically harmed by this. I'm just like, why?
Yeah. Well, you beget me.
Well, if you still want to follow us on Twitter. I haven't been loafing around.
I know, I'm such a heel.
Why?
You think these jokes are pretty crusty? Just a crumb of sanity in your day.
I am not toasted enough for this. Anyway, if you still somehow want to follow us on Twitter, you can. We're at Virtual Econcast. I am back from my Twitter hiatus as at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish. F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H. Also, I should start an alt handle. That's the bread.
Oh, that's horrible. Would that be like Art Decider?
That is the bread. That is not the bread.
That's horrible. Oh, I hate myself for saying this. Why? Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode, or Mike's bread, I guess, you can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com.
Yes. We are also available on a number of places. I'm not going to say that first one because they are on my shit list right now.
Yep.
iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Amazon, Stitcher, Pocket Cast. There's always one more.
Yeah!
Oh, the bug is ever in the face. Why? Oh, God.
That is the bread.
Oh, you don't have to be sourdough.
If he doesn't make it back for the next episode...
J. Jonah Jameson will step in. It's fine.
Don't worry about it, because I'm going to yeet him into the sun.
You're going to yeast me into the sun?
I hate this!
Please do subscribe, and if possible, review the show. In fact, you could review it. Let me just give you an example. You could say, virtual economy is the bread.
This is terrible.
Please let us know what you think. You can DM us with your favorite kinds of bread. You can send us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz and you can tell us your favorite kind of bread. Or...
I love that your voice cracked talking about bread.
I love bread. We also have Signal if you have secret bread.
Okay, no more talking for you. Anyway, if you missed out on our most recent... articles, I guess, on virtualeconcast.com. You can go read our trends pieces, and you can also go and read our... Yeah, they kind of are. You can also go and check out our top 10 games of 2021. At some point, we will have, I don't know, maybe an editorial calendar. Probably not. But also, we're on Instagram now.
We are.
We are going to be starting up the TikToks.
All right, so Instagram, our username is virtualeconcast.
It is.
Yeah.
TikTok, it is Virtual Econcast. We're also on Facebook.
We're going to be the very first bread TikTokers. It's going to be great.
I don't think that that's a thing. If it is a thing, it's actually about actual bread and baking. I'm sure that that's already on TikTok. Probably. Everything's on TikTok. Anyway, we are moving into new and interesting spaces on the internet. So you can go follow us in many different platforms and we'll be creating exciting new content in as many places as we can. And you can hang out with us on Discord as well.
Yep, so. Just hit us up in our DMs for an invite. We'll be glad to get you into the community. I love our community so much.
It's amazing.
They're the bread.
And with that, remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon for earnings, folks.